thank you all who participated in our collective sharing project by writing on cards here in the sanctuary or by sharing the things that you're hopeful and anxious about through the online forum. All of your responses are now up on that wall, including those that came in online. We will leave the display up until the end of next week's service in case people want to look at it. And I will also take some close-up pictures to post online so everyone has a chance to see them. And Susan's already nodding because she'll be getting the email with those attached. It takes a village. The project was, I thought, a really great way for us to practice the vulnerability of sharing what's on our hearts and assuming that we might be gentle with each other. And the vulnerability of witnessing what is on the hearts of others in our community. I hope it's also a way for each of us to take in the understanding that in our hopes and in our fears, we are not alone. We share the gifts and the burdens of being alive on the earth at this time, whether we are talking about them or not. So when we take the risk to enter into the vulnerable space of letting them rise to the surface, we find company and maybe even some solace. That's part of what building beloved community in our world weighs heavily on us, particularly as it's being expressed and institutionalized against transgender and other queer folk. I found the impact of capitalism and consumerism on our society and our planet gives us anxiety. I found that the lingering impacts of COVID on our congregation gives us anxiety. And I found that as people who care about love and justice and democracy and peace, that yes, we do have a lot to be anxious about. But we knew that, right? And we also share a lot of hopeful things, particularly in our grounding as people who work together to express our care for the world. We know that we have communities of people who share our values and care for our well-being. We hold gratitude for the health care that we have. We have friends and families who love us and accept us for who we are. We perceive desire to make positive change in the world around us. We know that there is love and creativity around us and that those things help make positive change in the world. We find beauty and resiliency in our earth home. And we believe in the energy and the capacity of our younger generations. Those are all things that showed up on the hope side of that wall. And it's so important to remember those sources of hope, not to focus only on them so we don't have to feel the anxieties, as tempting as that might be, but to hold them right alongside each other, right as they are there, staying connected to our own humanity and to each other as we continue the work of making this world one where we can all thrive. Because hope doesn't just come on its own, right? We can't isolate it because it's not isolated. It's born of our own tenacity, of our ability to perceive and acknowledge what gives us anxiety, what needs to be changed, and then work together towards something better. And it doesn't appear in the absence of anxiety or even in the absence of hate or fear. It's not either or. Hope exists, hope coexists with the anxiety that we experience or witness. It arises when we create the conditions for it, when we're able to see it or feel it or notice it, when we're able to keep our hearts open, which is hard sometimes. When we know ourselves as part of a community or a family of origin or of our own making or of our choice, when we're part of a community, when we're part of an ecosystem, when we're part of some web we can see or feel or know in our hearts. When we can sing together, or dream together, or work together toward justice, we bring hope into being. Joanna Macy is an environmental activist, an ecofeminist, an author, and a scholar of Buddhism, general systems theory, and deep ecology. In the book that she wrote with Chris Johnstone called Active Hope, How to Face the Mess We're In with Unexpected Resilience and Creative Power, they call hope a practice. And they summarize that practice with three basic steps. First, take in that clear view of reality, all of the things. Second, identify our vision for what we hope will happen. And third, take active steps to bring that vision about. Joanna writes, active hope is not wishful thinking. Active hope is not waiting to be rescued. Active hope is waking up to the beauty of life on whose behalf we can act. We belong to this world. The web of life is calling us forward at this time. We've come a long way and are here to play our part. With active hope, we realize that there are adventures in store, strengths to discover, and comrades to link arms with. Active hope is a readiness to discover the strengths in ourselves and in others, a readiness to discover the reasons for hope and the occasions for love, a readiness to discover the size and strengths of our hearts, our quickness of mind, our steadiness of purpose, our own authority, our love for life, the liveliness of our curiosity, the unsuspected deep well of patience and diligence, the keenness of our senses and our capacity to lead. She finishes by saying, none of these can be discovered in an armchair or without risk. So with that, we're back to vulnerability. It takes some measure of courage to face the risk of allowing ourselves to feel the impact of our anxieties. I'll be blunt here and say that we, and by we, I mean people like me, who have had the privilege of the comforts brought by a society based on resource extraction and dominion over both nature and non-white people. We have to realize that the state the world is in today is due to our own actions and inactions. And that those young people we have so much hope in are having to deal with the mess we've made. I have to take that in and figure out how to not get paralyzed by guilt as I take that in, right? We have to learn the vulnerability it takes to say, yes, I have knowingly or not been part of that problem. We have to engage in the grieving process around that. We have to learn to see our role differently and then work to make change. We have to acknowledge the vulnerabilities we've created, the vulnerability I just mentioned of the next generation in the face of climate migration and disaster, the vulnerability of the plants and the animals struggling as climate change happens faster than their adaptation can, the vulnerability of many human communities and nations that were already struggling due to how we and other developed nations have chosen to use the earth as a resource. We have practiced here together the vulnerability of accessing our anxieties, and we can practice this vulnerability too, because it will bring us new capacity for active hope. Joanna calls this the work that reconnects. It has four steps that are not a list, but a cycle. So first, we ground in gratitude. And if you can see the slide, you can see that that is centered around the roots of this plant on the image. Grounding in gratitude is where we think about why we're hopeful. It's where we think about all the things on that side of the wall for the reasons for gratitude. Thinking of those things, those hopeful things as reasons for gratitude. We can practice that. We can intentionally call to mind or remember what we're grateful for at any given moment. We have those tools, no matter where we are. We can remember what makes us come alive. We can take stock of what is within and around us, because that taking stock, it grounds us in gratitude, and it's a subversive act in and of itself, right? Coming out of gratitude and not of need. Second, where the leaves are on this dandelion that has become a cycle, we honor our pain for the world. And that's what I'm talking about a little bit. What we feel when we think about the state of the world is the right response. It's the perfectly natural response, right? It's hard. So to be alive right now is to both ground in gratitude, experience the mystery, and honor that pain. We can do both, just as we can hold our anxieties and our hopes at the same time. The practice of doing that, of honoring our pain for the world while grounding in gratitude, allows us to move toward the third place in that cycle, the place where the flower is blooming and beginning to go to seed. Seeing with new eyes, we feel more positive motivation for change. We find that that positive motivation pushes away the guilt, frees us from the guilt, frees us to think in different ways. We learn to remember that we're enough. A teaching that the world that our society does not want us to know. And we can learn what the world needs and avoid getting stuck in that guilt and in some of the anxieties. We can hold them, but we can avoid getting stuck in them. And then we can go forth. We can be like these dandelion seeds spreading everywhere. We go forth looking for the intersections between what makes us come alive, as we learn when we ground in gratitude, and what the world needs as we begin to see with new eyes, as Howard Thurman talks about, right? Don't ask for what the world needs. Ask for what makes you come alive and go do that. Because what the world needs is people who've come alive. And as we go forth, holding the gratitude, holding the pain, using them to see differently, we find new places in the work. And we find new places in our world for ourselves. Throughout all of this, we lean on each other when we're not strong. And we find grace. We find those moments of, yeah, I am doing the right thing. Or yeah, the sun's out today. Well, maybe not today. Yeah, there's things growing underneath that unexpected snow, right? We find those moments of grace. And we work to remember to be gentle with ourselves and with one another, for life is too transient to be cruel with one another. It is too short for thoughtlessness, too brief for hurting. Life is long enough for caring, It is lasting enough for sharing, precious enough for love. Thank you, Richard Gilbert. May it be so, and may we be so.